I'll ask anybody's question but yours, if you're an idiot.
My wife can score more than 2 buckets on 11 shots because I know my wife will at least shot fake one time.
I want they bury me upside down and my critics can kiss my...
All right, welcome in. Another week of Made for March, a college basketball podcast. Tim Leonard, Tyler Rocky here with you. You can follow the show on Twitter at @made4andmarch. Good week of college hoops, Ty. Lots to talk about on the agenda today. We'll recap ACC Big Ten Challenge. We'll try and figure out who is the number one team in college basketball after that has been a hot button topic. Duke went down after reclaiming the number one spot in the polls for their first time since 2019. We'll discuss some of the top teams. We'll get into our one and dones where we just quickly do some quick hitters, one thought, and then we're done on some of the other topics that were surrounding college hoops this week. And we'll also look into some lines from BovadaSportsbook.com over the course of the show because that's what we like to do on the show. We like to gamble and we like to try and help you guys find some advantages in the college basketball marketplace. But I guess we got to jump into the maybe game of the year, Gonzaga Duke. We haven't had a podcast since that, and it really lived up to the hype out in Las Vegas.
I was so excited. This game was awesome, first of all. And I think maybe the matchup of Chet versus Paolo that was built up didn't live up to the hype, but the game as a whole certainly lived up to the hype. I mean, Paolo Banchero goes out there and basically steals the number one pick headlines away from Chet Holmgren. And Chet didn't play awful in this game, 16-7, but you just saw a different player out there on the other side in Paolo Banchero. He had 21 points in the game, and just some of the things that he does out there on the floor, it just looks NBA ready already. Like, you could throw him on an NBA floor right now, and you would have no problems with him in your starting lineup. I don't know if you can exactly say the same thing for Chet right now. And Paolo just looks ready. He looks ready, and he looks like he could be a real star in the NBA.
Yeah, I think Chet is maybe... I mean, he's got to put on some weight. That's the whole thing with him, right? But at the same time, he's just so flexible from a defensive perspective, and the way that the NBA is shifting, he definitely fits that really well. He's such a great rim protector. The difference in this game for Gonzaga as to why they weren't just able to bully teams like they did to UCLA, like they did to Texas, like they did all of last year's regular season. They came into this game, they had won 35 straight games by double digits in the regular season. That is honestly laughable. And I think they were like 97-4 in their last 101 regular season games before this one. Then they actually were kind of down to the wire with Tarleton State after this. But this is a really good Gonzaga team. The difference is Duke has Mark Williams, and they have a guy you can put on Drew Timmy. And that's what stood out to me is foul trouble played a factor, but also Drew Timmy just wasn't the bucket that we normally see from him. He made some shots down the stretch, but even when they needed one in the last 5 minutes or even last minute of the game, I think if I remember correctly, he didn't score on one play, and Mark Williams blocked him a couple times and was whistled for a foul on one that was a clear block that shouldn't have been called. But that's a huge, huge rim protector add for Duke. The fact that they have Mark Williams to contest Drew Timmy really threw Gonzaga out of sorts because their role players stepped up in this game. It just wasn't as much as they normally get from Timmy and Holmgren, I guess.
You know, looking back on the Champions Classic, there are a couple things that stood out to me about just a couple of the players in the events. First of all, I thought, okay, this is great for Kentucky. They've got a true point guard, Sahvir Wheeler. But my number two really was, hey, Mark Williams looks like he could be a real difference maker for this Duke team this year. Kind of silent last year, but, you know, he's got the frame for it. He looks like he could be a legitimate defensive threat for this team. And then he goes out there in this game, pulls out 6 blocks, 9 rebounds to go along with 17 points. And that's the thing with some of these defensive-minded centers is, okay, how are you going to put together the offensive piece to the puzzle? And Mark Williams seems to have sort of figured it out to a degree. He does very well in this game. He's had a couple other nice games as well this season. He looks like he could be a real big impact for this Duke team because I'll tell you what, one thing that I've noticed about Duke, and it certainly played out against Ohio State, and we'll get into that, but they don't have a lot of depth. They really don't, and especially at the big man spots because Once Mark Williams goes down and you're relying on Theo John, like, Theo John's a nice little try-hard hustle sort of player, but he's not Mark Williams where he's got natural gifts that are simply going to change the basketball game.
Yeah, and AJ Griffin, mostly because of injuries, just isn't ready to give them much right now. So he played, I think, 2 minutes in the Ohio State game. He's one of your 3-5 stars. You're not getting anything from him. So all of a sudden, that's one less body that you maybe thought you'd have. Now, maybe Griffin will come along here, because I definitely think that's a large part of injuries for him is why he's struggling to sort of find his spot in the rotation to this point. On Paolo Banchero, unbelievable first half, but then the guy cramps up again in the second half, and it's weird, right? Like, this is the second time we've seen this, two huge games, and it wasn't like he was just fighting a little Charlie horse and he shook it off. Like, he went back, he got an IV, he was out of the game for a while, he came back in, he was hobbled, and then Holly Rose talking on the game against Ohio State.
Yes, I know exactly. I wanted to bring this up.
Oh, my
this
gosh. Is, I don't know what pounds? To think. 7 pounds, Ty. Can you imagine? That can't
he
be right.
He sweats out 7 pounds a game. Like, that
I don't
can't
believe
be right.
It. No.
That can't. And I'm not doubting Holly Rose reporting by any stretch of the imagination here, but it's just like the human body is not designed to do that.
That's unhealthy. You might need to, I mean, maybe that's what they're saying is they need to check him in. Like, because there is sort of a weird, why is he cramping, right? Like, he's a fully healthy, training a lot, college athlete that I just don't think, I mean, sure, if you cramp once, it's one thing. And maybe we're reading too much into it. But if it becomes 3-4 times over the course of the season here, and again, it wasn't like a normal cramp. And then you hear the stuff about him losing 7 pounds over the course of a game. I just, like, how do you even finish a game if that's what you're doing? Your body would be, like, self-destructing.
Yeah, the dehydration factor of it all. And they went into, like, all the different sort of things that he takes during a game and whatnot. But it just doesn't make a lot of physiological sense. Biological
sense. Yeah,
because
they're shoving Gatorade and whatever to him all game. Like, they're doing everything they can to make it so that guy isn't cramping. And he's doing everything he can to make it so that he is able to play, IVs, whatever. That's concerning to me that he's cramping in that big of a game in that stage.
And listen, it's only going to get deeper and deeper for a guy like Paul. Like, his next step is the NBA. You're tacking on another 8 minutes per game. Like, he's essentially playing a double overtime college game every single time he steps onto the floor in a regular season NBA game. So I found that very odd, but yeah, he's still a hell of a basketball player, cramps or not. It's just you want to have him out there. You want Paolo to be a guy who can give you 35, 36 minutes a night. And I don't know if he's going to be able to do that given the cramping and stuff that he's kind of been faced with throughout his career. So we'll see what happens with him.
Right.
But it's certainly a situation to monitor there, the health and sweating of Paolo Banchero.
Yeah, it's been an interesting start to his career between hanging back in the backseat and getting aiding and abetting on that DUI or DWI, I guess I should say, and then whatever this is with the 7 pounds and the cramping. But the bottom line is when he's out there, he looks like the best player in the country. And I mean that with all due respect to Drew Timmy. He took over that first half. And I guess Timmy did that against Texas. I was going to say in a way that Timmy can't. Timmy definitely can. But I don't know, there's something about Banchero that is sort of magnetic, and it's got that feel of those elite Duke freshmen that we've seen come through in the past 10, 15 years.
So Bovada has the odds to win the Wooden Award, and eventually we'll do our Baconator Bachelor later on once things start to thin themselves out a little bit here. Paolo right now is sitting passenger alongside Drew Timmy. Timmy's in the lead right now. He's 4-1. Paolo's plus 475, and then you got a huge drop-off. You got to go all the way down to 12-1 is where you'll find your next guys, and Johnny Juzang and Ashaya Baji. But the 475 on Paolo, you're not going to get a much better price than that. However, I will say, some of the tiebreakers are working against him here. When you look at some of the guys that he's listed alongside in this conversation, he's the freshman. It's very tough for the freshman to win this award.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, you've got Timmy, who's an upperclassman. You've got Juzang, who's been around the block in his junior season. Obagi's a senior. Gillespie's a senior. Hunter Dickinson came back for his sophomore season.
He's not
Kofi's
winning. I can tell you that.
Yeah, after last night. EJ Liddell. He's an upperclassman. Trace Jackson Davis. Like, there's just a bunch of these guys who have been there for a long time, been in college, and it feels like when all things are sort of equal, that's going to work against Paulo when it all comes down to this award. So I don't know if I'd take the 475 right now, but you're also probably not going to see much of a better price the rest of the way. So, and he's going to be playing on national TV pretty much every single game this year.
Yeah.
Unlike Drew Timmy, who's going to be on WCC TV or whatever the hell they have out there. Or Juzang, who's going to be on the Pac-12 network that nobody gets.
Right, but I think Drew Timmy, the mustache, he's a big
enough.
He's
got some
name.
Iconic stuff. Yeah. No doubt. Yeah. I mean, all these guys are.
Drew Timmy, I would say, is going to win, and I would take his +4. I think that's the best odds of all the ones that you just laid out there, because he's a senior, and that's not just a tiebreaker. It's like the deal breaker. Like, I think that's a huge thing. I don't see them giving it to, I mean, I guess Zion probably won it, but I don't know. It feels like a year where Drew Timmy is just tailor-made to win that award, because when you went down the list there, some of those other names, I wouldn't even consider them having a chance, and you're naming them as like the sixth or seventh best odds. Now, Trayce Jackson-Davis is going to put up numbers. I could see him maybe, if anything, rising in the odds. But when you get into the Hunter Dickinson tier and guys like that, it's just, like, even Johnny Juzang, is he really going to win the award? I'm not saying he has no shot, but I'm right. pretty comfortable saying right now that it's either Timmy or Bancaro winning that award.
Let me throw a name at you, and I want to hear your thoughts. And you know, I'm actually going to save it. I'm going to save it because we do need to talk about this team as a whole.
Okay, so what you want to get into Ohio State Duke? Because
yeah,
that's,
let's do
that's
it.
The big one here.
Double dose of Duke here.
Double dose of Duke, which I know everyone loves, and I don't know if anyone's heard, but it's Coach K's last year, apparently. And
it's eating our brains.
Yeah,
it's eating our brains
his,
right now.
His last non-conference road game he will ever coach.
I guess that's what happens when you venture away.
Yeah, it's actually pretty
tougher.
Poetic there.
Yeah.
What I really enjoyed is that Ohio State down 13 at the half, 43-30, and Holly Rowe, who's getting a lot of love on this podcast, had to interview Chris Holtmann because, you know, normally you would always get the winning coach, but
right.
Coach K doesn't do that. He's too cool for school. He's too cool for the halftime. He doesn't do any interviews. Sometimes you'll see the assistant when it was Wojo or someone like that jump on the mic. But, you know, unfortunately, Chris Holtmann, who's down 13 and wants to run into the locker room and probably ream his guys out and come up with a game plan, has to sit there and take some questions. And he handled it like a pro. And then karma comes in his favor and Ohio State comes back. And Duke didn't score in what, like the last 25 minutes of this game? That's what it felt like at some point.
Final 5 minutes, a 14-1 run for the Buckeyes.
Yeah. Well, I don't think this means Duke's like not as good as we thought or anything. I thought this was a true trap game. It was one of those games where
yes.
Bovada laid out the line and it was -3, I believe, when it opened, Duke favorites. And all my buddies, all my Joe Betters I know, not saying I'm not a Joe Better, but just like everyone I knew was like, oh my God, have you seen this
only
line?
Three?
This yeah. is free. Duke's going to win. And that's when you're just like, Vegas knows, because it was a total trap game for the Blue Devils.
Absolutely. And I felt it was a trap game too. Like, you're coming off the high of a big win. Everyone's kind of pumping your tires here. And it's not like this is a slouch of an Ohio State team. And like, say what you want about the atmosphere of the Schottenstein Center, but for big games, it gets up. Like, it's a big arena. I don't know if you've ever been there before, but
it's a little too big, probably.
Yeah, exactly. It's like an NBA arena that they're trying to use for a college basketball game. And, like, the perfect college basketball arena size is what? What would you say? Like 15,000?
Yeah.
13,000
so.
Something? But when you try to shove all these bodies into the NBA arenas, it gets a little dicey. But when you fill up those NBA arenas, like you were obviously going to do for this game, Coach K's last game against Ohio State in Columbus, like those are the games where that stuff matters. And the size of the crowd will actually live up to how many seats are in the building. And I think that made it tough for Duke down the stretch because they did not look very good. They were not executing down the road. And meanwhile, on the other side, you got an Ohio State team that's just kind of scrappy. I mean, you got guys like Zed Key and EJ Liddell that are going to make the veteran play. They're going to make the smart move. Some big shots that were hit down the stretch. Cedric Russell was fantastic in this game off the bench. So Ohio State kind of had the formula to beat them. They were definitely the hungrier team, I feel like, in this game. When you look at, oh, you're coming off the tough loss against Florida, and you had a tough loss earlier in the season against Xavier. And again, we kind of talk about this all the time with scheduling sort of building its way up. You had the Xavier game after a couple, like a three-game soft stretch. You had the Xavier game. They're 33 in KenPom at the time. Then you would go out, beat Seton Hall, 34th in KenPom. Then you work up to Florida, 14th. You lose that game by three. And then you've got this game against Duke, which is like the pinnacle of it all. And you've got a game against Kentucky down the road too. But this is sort of like what you were working for, building up, and mission accomplished for the Buckeyes.
Yeah, and I don't want to short side Ohio State here because that was a really impressive win. I think Zed Key was huge. They also didn't really even play that well for a good chunk of the game and still were able to win, which says a lot about how good the Big Ten is and says a lot about how good Ohio State is as a team. They're still a force to be reckoned with here, and they're only going to get better. EJ Liddell, it wasn't like it took a 30-point effort from him or something. Like, they're a pretty balanced team, even though EJ Liddell is up there on those Bovada odds of the Wooden Award. It's not like he's head and shoulders better than the rest of the team and they need him to be a factor. That was kind of encouraging to see. He hit some big shots down the stretch, but a large part of their run was just team basketball.
Right, and that's the beautiful part. And that's just Chris Holtmann, really, right? Like, he does a great job of getting his guys ready every single game, and you never know who's going to be the hero in this game. Like, Zed Key was fantastic and EJ Liddell, but I didn't see this being the game where Cedric Russell comes alive and helps you win a basketball game. He was great in this game and gave you the minutes and the points that you needed down the stretch to put together a big upset win at home.
So overall in this ACC Big Ten Challenge, actually I think this year was Big Ten ACC Challenge, which is
you
so
never
stupid
know.
That
it's
they,
always the
they
shuffle.
Always switch it. Yep. Yeah. So Big Ten won 8 games, ACC won 6, and it was kind of like a rally from the conference to get to 6. Mm-hmm. I would say that's actually a pretty good result for the ACC. I thought they to win
you
6
take
games,
that.
You take it. You take... They won like every overtime game as well. Syracuse, Indiana was double OT. NC State, Nebraska was 4 overtimes, and it was Wake Forest, Northwestern was another one that went down the stretch. So they kind of, all the games they won were close. We'll get into Purdue and Florida State in just a second because that's an example of just the Big Ten team beating up on an ACC team. But on the note of Duke, it is interesting because they're projected to win every single game the rest of the way now in KenPom. That's not shocking. That's what you should be. I guess they're 7 on KenPom, which is even lower than maybe people might think. But I guess what I'm saying is they don't really play anyone until ACC play again. And then in ACC play, you got Virginia Tech, you got UNC a couple times, you got Florida State, sure. Virginia's probably going to get to a point where we're confident in them being a decent team. But quad one wins aren't coming out the wazoo in ACC play this year. So as much as that's fine that you lost to Ohio State in the early season, when you're looking at Duke and you're stacking them up against the likes of Purdue and the likes of Kansas and Baylor for a potential one seed down the road, like that might actually hurt them, this loss to Ohio State.
Right. I look at it though this way too. Like, you took care of business for the most part in your non-conference slate here. Like,
yeah, you still went two out, great be, wins.
You got
two site.
Great neutral site wins. And when it all comes down to it, like, yeah, the quad one wins may not be there, but what, Duke's probably not losing more, barring some sort of injury. Duke's probably not losing much more than, what, 2 games in ACC play? Like, and so by 2 games, I mean like literally the rest of the regular season. They're probably not going to lose more than 2 games. They're going to trip up at points in ACC play. I think some teams are just going to be able to out-depth them and maybe pick up some wins that way, kind of like what we saw with Ohio State do. Like, there's going to be games like Ohio State in the ACC for Duke. That'll pop up from time to time, whether it's like a Florida State who's just going to have too much depth for them, and they get Florida State twice in the ACC as well. So I'm intrigued, but again, I'm not necessarily, like, I'm not counting them out. Like, I still think they're in a pretty good spot to be a one seed. I just think they're that good of a team.
Yeah, all right, that's enough about Duke. We've talked about them for like 18
enough
minutes
Duke.
Now. I can't do any more. Let's talk about Purdue, Florida State. Because Purdue all upset that they only got 10 AP first place votes. They've never been number one in program history. I think the only team that has been ranked inside the top 25 and never been number one more than Purdue is Maryland, which, by the way, Maryland, maybe we'll get into them in the one and dones, but I just, every year Maryland does this. I'm sick of people falling into that trap. But anyway, sticking with Purdue, they go out, they beat Florida State, who was shorthanded in this game, but still.
Didn't matter.
Yeah, they just bullied
him. No, Raekwon Evans was not a 28-point difference in this game.
Right, and, you know, thoughts and prayers out to Raekwon Evans' family, especially right now, because it seems like the reason he missed the game, hopefully he'll be back for the Syracuse game, is because his brother passed away, which is a really sad story. But I'm with you. I think Purdue wins this game no matter what. And Purdue kind of just beat Florida State in its own game. I mean, they just have longer dudes and more athletic dudes than kind of anyone in the country, and that's always been Leonard Hamilton's thing. And it was interesting, after the game, Leonard Hamilton said something like, that's one of the most complete teams I've ever played against. And I don't usually say this, but that team screams Final Four. It's hard to say anything different right now when you look at Purdue.
Purdue's my favorite team in the country to watch. They simply are. And you look at it, I mean, offensively, they're the best offensive team in the country. And I'm going to say it's not even close right now. It's not even close. They're putting up 92-plus in every single game except one this year, and that one was against Villanova. I mean, what they're doing on the offensive end, and it's not like their defense is bad either. Like, right now, on KenPom,
they're ranked 36. It probably needs to get better, but yeah, it's not bad.
But, like, look at what they're allowing points-wise in some of these games. They're in the 60s with a lot of these teams, low 70s. They held, I get it's Nebraska-Omaha, but you held them to 40. You won that game by 57 points. Like, they're doing a good enough job given the offense that they have. And it's not like the offense is some sort of unsustainable thing. Like, sometimes you see these high-powered offenses who just go out there and shoot a ton of threes. And this is a Purdue team, like, yeah, they shoot really well from three. They're shooting about 45% from three. But it's not like they rely on the three ball, I would say. They could win some of these games while also scoring 80 points. The defense is good enough to hold up on that end, I believe.
Yeah, this is a great college basketball team. And it would be probably the most Purdue thing ever to go and lose to Iowa later in the week so they don't ever get to number one. I really hope for their fan base sake that doesn't happen. Iowa, by the way, looks pretty good. But Jaden Ivey goes 4-for-6 from three in this game against Florida State. I'm not the first person to say this. I'm not going to be the last. But if that dude is making three-pointers, just forget about it. Like, night.
Yeah.
I mean, I just don't know how you stop this team because, especially, I mean, he's such an NBA prospect already. If he can add that to his arsenal long-term for his individual success, I mean, he's a high draft pick next year. And Zach Edey's a freak. He's 7'4", but can do things that most 7'4 guys can't. And then you got Travion Williams coming off the bench right now, plays 20 minutes against Florida State, and talk about doing things that most guys can't. He is just awesome to watch play basketball because of his passing, his vision as a big guy. It's unlike anything I've ever seen, really, at a college level.
Can we do a quick tip of the cap, helmet sticker, all that jazz for Travion Williams? Because how many all Big Ten caliber players would be willing to come off the bench and it, like, genuinely still care about the team? I literally think all power conference player who's coming off the bench and still genuinely loves his team and his coach. Like, I literally think the list is Travion Williams and it ends there. I'm serious.
Yeah, shout out to Matt Painter too, I guess, for making
it 1,000%. Yep, but really, like, I think a lot of it has to be said about the character of Travion Williams. He wants to win. He's a senior and he wants to win. And to me, that is a beautiful, beautiful thing to have a guy of his caliber. Like, he could, if he really wanted to, jab with Matt Painter and say, no, you're going to start both me and Zach Edey. Like, they've got another 6'10 guy starting in their starting lineup. Like, well, why can't you just throw Travion? But he sees what's best for the team. It's not like he's not getting his minutes either. He's still getting plenty of minutes out there.
I mean, he's only playing 20 minutes. Like, most nights he'll play somewhere in the neighborhood of 15 to 20 minutes. But I think that's also because he's just not a guy that you can run out there for like 30 minutes and produce so talented. And they're up in a lot of these games too.
And he also hasn't played, like, he's never been a guy who's going to go out there and play 30, 35. He's always been in the neighborhood of the 25 or so minutes per game. But looking at what he's done and meant to this team, I think it's spectacular to watch. And really, like, that's the guy that you want on your team. You want a guy like Travion Williams. You need guys like Travion Williams on your team. And it's a damn luxury to also have a guy like Zach Edey, Jaden Ivey, Sasha Stefanovic. I mean, the list goes on and on. Isaiah Thompson shooting 61% from three right now. Like, yeah. The list goes on and on. They're not the team Baylor was defensively. But doesn't this kind of feel very Baylor-esque from a season ago? Like, really tight-knit group. You've got some stars on your team. You've got just a very good cohesive unit that loves each other. Like, this feels very Baylor-ish from a season ago.
Yeah. So, Sasha Stefanovic on him. There's always one guy. We need to, like, come up with a name for this, or someone needs to make an award that is the guy that you've just never seen miss a three. I know he misses threes.
The Ersan Ilyasova Award. I have never seen Ersan Ilyasova miss a shot.
It's like... you know who was like this? It was Svi Mykhailiuk for Kansas for a while. It was just like, I know he's shooting like 38%, but I promise you, I watch a lot of Kansas. I watch a lot of Purdue, and I have legit never seen him a ball leave his fingertips and miss from three-point range. It just doesn't, it doesn't feel like he ever misses, and he's been there for a while, and he's hit a lot of big shots, and that's a glue guy that you just need on a national title-like team.
Right. Maybe we call it like the EuroLeague MVP, because we're giving you all these EuroLeague guys, it feels like. Like the EuroLeague MVP playing in college basketball. But no, I mean, it's just having guys like that that are experienced. And you kind of hit on this last year and in our preview, too. Like, this is a team that saw some heartbreak last year in the tournament. And is that going to be what fuels them? So I want to talk about Jaden Ivey real quick, because he is my favorite player to watch on my favorite team to watch right now. He reminds me a lot of like Ja Morant, and like Derrick Rose almost with a jump shot. Like, he's a freak athlete. Just absolutely can get to the bucket at will. Great passer and all that stuff. Right now, when you go to Bovada and you look at those wooden player of the year odds, Jaden Ivey sitting at 20-1. I mean, talk me off the ledge here. Like,
no, he's a good flyer, because Purdue could be number one and they might just look to him.
Because like, everyone wants to talk about how, oh, like the ACC sucks. The Big Ten has not been much better.
Yeah. It's still better.
Don't get me wrong. It's better. It's definitely better. But you can see the cracks in the armor there. Like, Michigan has fallen off a cliff. Illinois, I mean, what's wrong with Illinois right now? And are you bought in on the middle tier of the Nebraskas, Northwesterns, Indiana? Like, don't get me wrong, it's a better conference. It's a deeper conference than the ACC right now. But I don't know if it's by a whole heck of a lot. And I could see Purdue kind of doing what Duke is expected to do the rest of the way. Like, and here's the difference, is this is a very deep Purdue team. And on top of that, they don't necessarily need the three ball to be an effective offense. So the recipe is like, right now they're projected to go on KenPom. They're projected to win every single game the rest of the way. Will they go undefeated? Probably not, right? But no one else in the Big Ten is ranked inside I'm looking right now. Nobody else is inside the top 17 on KenPom.
Yeah. Iowa, their next opponent, is one of the highest. Iowa's up to 20 in KenPom. So,
and they're projected to win that game by 9.
Yeah, I don't think Purdue's going to lose at Mackey all year, but they've got NC State, they got Butler at a neutral site. Those should be two wins later on in December here. And then, you know, it's going to be those road games in Big Ten play that they might get tripped up. Indiana on the road, Illinois on the road, those type of things. Illinois, we can get into them at some point, but there's definitely some lingering issues there that are real issues. I do think if you're ranking a top tier right now, for me, and I know this is kind of a hard argument to make given that Gonzaga lost to Duke, but I still think Gonzaga is the best overall team in college basketball, because Purdue's defense is still a little bit of a hole, but then I think Purdue is firmly two, Duke is three, and I will say, everyone has sort of just named those three teams.
I know where you're going here.
I don't think they're head and shoulders better than some of the teams like Kansas and Baylor from the Big 12. I like why are we sleeping
Kansas
on Baylor?
A lot. And Baylor just, I mean, who would have thought a reigning national championship team could fly this far under the radar.
Right.
Like, I get you lost Davion and Jared Butler, Maceo Teague.
Also, they just punched their ticket to the Final Four. They won the battle for Atlantis.
They did. That's right.
Did we forget about that?
So, yeah. It felt like this Atlantis kind of had no juice. And it's weird because your reigning champion won battle for Atlantis. So, we do have to keep this in mind when we are filling out our bracket. We have to funnel Baylor to the Final Four for the upcoming March Madness bracket. But let me throw this at you, okay? Let's say Purdue loses by 2 or 3 points to Iowa on Friday. Who's the number one team come Monday?
Man, that is tough. Probably Baylor, because they're undefeated still. Baylor, I believe, is 4 right now in the polls, right?
Yeah, I'd have to go double check,
but yeah, they've got some quality wins. They beat Michigan State. They beat VCU. They beat Arizona State in that tournament. I guess VCU and Arizona State aren't that great, but Michigan State's a good win, and they crushed them in the second half. I think you'd have to give it to an undefeated team. I don't think Purdue's going to lose, and that would be, like I said, heartbreaking for the fans if they didn't get to number one. But I do think, so Kansas has the worst loss out of those five teams I just mentioned. They lost on a crazy, wild buzzer beater to Dayton.
And what is it with Dayton and Kansas and just weird stuff happening in those games?
Dayton is maybe the most puzzling resume of any team right now. They went on a run of losing to UMass Lowell, Austin Peay, and some really bad teams, and then they reeled off 3 in a row down in Disney at that ESPN Events Invitational, which is very clearly a tournament that they just couldn't find a sponsor for. I think it used to be the Old Spice or something like that, but I did get a kick out of it. It was where they played the bubble games, I think. And,
yeah,
you know, there were some weird results there. Iona beat Alabama, stuff like that, but I still think Kansas is legit good. I think that was just, I mean, they were up like 14 and just blew a lead, and it was not good. I'm not saying they should be number one in the polls, but I don't really know why we're all, maybe it's because of the Gonzaga-Baylor stuff last year where we're all just trying to identify, like, oh, who's number one,
these
who's
undefeated
number two.
Powers.
Yeah, where's the teardrop? I don't think any of these teams are going to scare being undefeated for the full, I mean, we already know Duke and Gonzaga aren't, so really it's Purdue and Baylor that we're only, you know, counting on at this point. There might be some other teams, sure, but I don't think anyone's going to take undefeated into like February this year.
No, I'm with you there. I mean, I just think some of these conference schedules are going to be too tough at a certain point, and just the grind of the conference schedule too. You might catch yourself in some look ahead games as well. So yeah, I mean, let's say Purdue loses a close one to Iowa. You're probably right. It's Baylor, but I'd still be sort of, and like Baylor's going to play Arkansas Pine Bluff, which is the second worst team per KenPom in the entire country this weekend. So, I mean, they'll put their style points up this weekend, but yeah, it's probably Baylor. I don't think Baylor necessarily is the best team in the country, but they will be number one probably. And I don't know, are we going to get one of these seasons now where it was like, what was it, 2-3 years ago where you just had a new captain at number one? It felt like every single week it was just a rotating door of different teams that were claiming the top spot. And it was really tough to actually figure out who was the number one team in the country because it changed like every single week.
Yeah. And when I say Gonzaga is the most complete team, I say that they shouldn't be number one in the polls or anything like that. But I say, let's just take Bovada odds out of it. And they are leading the Bovada odds right now at plus 400 to win the national title. But if you came to me tomorrow and you were like, all right, you're like, your life's in jeopardy and you have to pick one team to win the national title. And if you get it right, you stay alive and you win a bajillion dollars, but you can only pick one team. I think I'm picking Gonzaga still.
You're gonna
hit
your wagon
there.
And I think
Purdue is close. Who would you pick in that scenario?
I'd go Purdue. Okay. I'm drinking so much black and gold Kool-Aid right now. Like I'm feel like Paolo Banchero on the bench, like trying to get those 7 pounds back right now with all the Purdue Kool-Aid I'm drinking right now, because like they are just such a complete team. And it reminds me a little bit of how well Gonzaga and Baylor played at the beginning of last season. And let's be honest, like if Gonzaga or Baylor, if those teams were playing this season, they would still be head and shoulders above this tier of Duke, Purdue, Gonzaga, but I think Purdue's the closest of a carbon copy to those sort of teams right now that it's hard for me to kind of shy away from what they've done. They're dominating teams. They're dominating good teams too.
Yeah, it'd be interesting if they played at a neutral site right now, Purdue Gonzaga. What would the line be on Bovada? I'd be curious. I mean, it'd probably be, you know, pretty close one way or the other. I just don't know if someone would have a slight edge in that right now, because Gonzaga has blitzed Texas and UCLA as well. UCLA or Texas was at home, mm-hmm. so that's a big advantage. But yeah, I think those three teams are definitely what you have to be ranking as the top three right now. I wouldn't sleep on kind of that next tier, though.
And listen, right, so let's not punish Gonzaga either for having a three-point loss at a neutral site to Duke. Like right. that's the blemish on the resume right now.
And they play Alabama this weekend. That's going to be interesting. Yeah. I think that's another neutral site. They just play – shout out to Mark Few because they do it right. I know
get
they
the show
have
on the
to
road.
Because
like,
of their conference.
But I'm also glad they don't do like the true road games, because that's unfair to them because they're scheduling so many of these. But I like the way that Mark Few does this and gets his team out on the road, gets them in big venues, big events, so people can come and see their team.
Yeah. All right, you want to get into some one and dones here?
Let's do it.
One and done.
My guys.
Obviously, we have one in our conference. Has a doctorate degree in one and dones, right?
All right, I already mentioned Baylor. I think people are sleeping on them a little bit. I also will say another team I think people are sleeping on. Well, one is Arizona, who I've been on for a while. I think people are starting to come around a little bit more on them after they gave it to Michigan, which looks a little bit easier as time has passed here. But how about LSU? They're up to 15 in KenPom, and they took it to Ohio last night. They've had four straight top 100 KenPom wins. And shout out to the SEC as a whole, because they have seven teams inside the top 25 on KenPom right now. They don't have any inside the top 10, I don't believe. But when you've got seven in the top 25, that is a loaded conference. And it goes back to something we've been harping on a while on this podcast. And even when we chat about college basketball off the air, the SEC is doing things right. They are with the modern times. These young coaches that are allowing the five stars to come in, make mistakes, they're giving them the, you know, red carpet so that they can get to the NBA. They're catering to them. They're probably giving them some cash, definitely in the case of LSU and Will Wade. But this is a conference that is on the rise, and there's something about these football schools that are getting good at basketball as well. And I look at other conferences like the ACC. I think the SEC is just way better than the ACC right now. Like, if there was an ACC-SEC challenge, I don't think it's a fair fight whatsoever.
Right. I'm 100% with you there. I mean, looking at LSU, and you bring up all those ranked teams out of the SEC, LSU isn't even one of them. They're on the outside looking in right now. That's probably going to change come Monday, but they've got a game against Georgia Tech neutral site this weekend, so that's another top 100 KenPom. And again,
there's an ACC-SEC right there.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, and guess what? It doesn't seem like a fair fight right now. Now, I don't know if Georgia Tech's the representative you want to be sending for this fight, but that's a whole nother story. And I'm just looking here at LSU's schedule to start SEC play. You want to see these teams? Auburn, Kentucky, Tennessee, Florida, Arkansas,
wow.
Bama, Tennessee
holy
again,
cow.
And then it's back. Like they get the bad teams backloaded here. Like their next like seven games are A&M, TCU, Ole Miss, Vandy, A&M, Mississippi State, Georgia, South Carolina. By the way, shout out to Georgia, big win against Memphis yesterday.
Tom Crean, number 400.
Yeah, it's a big 400 for him too. Yeah. But like right out of the gate, those first six, seven games in SEC play, all coming against top 25 KenPom teams. So we may see them fall off a little bit, but don't let that blind you from what they've done so far. They're probably going to go about 500 in that stretch, maybe a little below 500.
That
but
is
you'll
a
take
gauntlet.
That.
Holy
but yeah,
cow.
Like,
yeah.
Like I'm trying to think of, aside from like these non-con little stretches that you see at these Feast Week tournaments or what Gonzaga's doing, like it doesn't get harder than that. The no. Auburn, Kentucky, Tennessee, Florida, Arkansas, Bama, and then boom, you get another Tennessee smacked in there. Like, that's a hell of a stretch to open up SEC play.
Yeah, there's no Tarleton State. Like, even Gonzaga right now, they're playing a lot of tough teams, but at least they get an off night or two to work on some things. That is a really tough start to conference play. Almost makes
but,
me
like,
think that...
That just shows the nature of the SEC, right?
Yeah.
Like that's not oh, like we're going out and putting together a tough schedule. We're putting our hard hats on like Mark Few. No, this is just this is what life in the SEC is going to be like this season, because it's the deepest conference. I think we can pretty definitively say that. Like,
it's either that or the Big 12. Yeah. Yeah. But I agree.
And I look at, like, okay, I'm going to pull up another SEC school's schedule here to start. All right, here's Auburn's start. That's the first team LSU plays. So they got LSU. Then you get a little bit of a gimme with South Carolina, but that game's on the road. And then Florida, Bama, Ole Miss, Georgia, Kentucky. Like, it's still a very, very tough stretch for these teams. No matter how you slice it, all these teams are going to have these sort of gauntlets, and it's going to be a damn rock fight every night in the SEC. It's going to feel like SEC football. And again, when you talk about the football schools have gotten the power in basketball now, that's what happens. When you've got these basketball schools that have all these resources and all this money, you can only pour so much money into football, right? Like, at some point, there's a threshold of how much money you can pour into football, and then boom, all right, we're going to pour it into the next moneymaker. What's that? Basketball. And all these resources, the facilities, all that stuff is sort of culminating now, and you're seeing all these basketball schools that come from football backgrounds, all of a sudden they're becoming the powers of the sport.
Right. I just think if I was a 16, 17-year-old kid right now, and I really think we're onto something here with this, SEC is going to be one of the better conferences for a long time, because
yeah, this is not a one-year blip. This is going to happen for a while here.
And so take, you know, some of the ACC guard, like, not to pick on our guy Jim Boeheim at Syracuse, we're Syracuse grads here, but when you're debating right now between Auburn or Syracuse, a while ago that would seem foolish. It would be like, oh my gosh, Auburn, they stink. Why would, you know, Syracuse is an elite basketball school.
Even if Auburn was good, like, just think aura-wise.
But now you think about what a kids want these days. They want to get to the NBA. They want to have reins to the offense. They want to play against good competition. They want to have a great climate, have great facilities, you know, social media and all that. Like, it's so much of it
is NIL.
The aesthetic of playing. Like, playing at Auburn is just fun. I don't know. I just really think, and I went to Syracuse. I picked going to college at Syracuse. So I'm not saying that there's not some appeal to that as well. And I think Syracuse is still going to get some recruits, or not to just pick on them, like other schools, Indiana up north, whatever. Like, they're still going to pull in guys, but NIL, all that stuff, it's playing for a young coach that Nate Oates, remember we joked on this pod last year, he's helping him out with like girl trouble or whatever. Like, Jim Boeheim's not doing that. I don't know. It's just more of the times is shifting to the SEC.
Well, I mean, just think about just Auburn in general, like everything about it, more appealing weather, more appealing facilities. Like, it's getting to that point with them. I just think, okay, you talk about getting guys to the NBA, okay? Let's think back to last year. Sharif Cooper came in what, game like 19 or 20 last season?
Yeah.
And ends up being a second-round pick?
And Jabari Smith, he's a top 10 pick this year, no doubt. And there was not many scenarios, right, not many scenarios where he, like, busted. Because even if he comes in and he struggles and he makes mistakes, Bruce Pearl is just going to be like, no, like, dude, this is the agreement. You're going to be a top 5 pick. We want you to be a top 5 pick.
Yeah,
because
it's good for our program. And like, yeah, Sharif Cooper, he ends up being a second-round pick. But if he came in game 20 at pretty much any other school in America, he's not going to the NBA draft. He's probably not given the leeway to do a lot of the stuff that he was doing at Auburn. And that to me is the sign of, okay, that's a change right there. That's a change in philosophy, because it's one thing to be like Kentucky, right? And be that developmental program where our goal isn't necessarily to win national championships. Our goal is to get you to the NBA. But, like, at the end of the day, Kentucky's still winning. They do have a national championship in their back pocket. Sure, is it as many as Wildcat fans would like? No, it's far from it. They probably would have liked to have 4 or 5 by now with all the talent that's been infused into their program. But they're still winning games. They're still getting to Final Fours. And I think you're going to see a lot more Kentuckys start to pop up in this SEC.
Yeah, that's the way the times are shifting for sure. All right, I'm going to rattle off my last one and done, that you go for whatever you've got on your end. I just went through the Bart Torvik rankings, and the interesting thing about Bart Torvik is you can take away all preseason history expectations from their rankings when you change sort of the end date and the start date. So basically, these are the best resumes to date from everyone starting from scratch at the start of the year.
Okay, I like this.
And the top five teams, number one's going to surprise. Yeah, you go for it, guess.
So top five teams, number one's going to surprise. And this is just resume, right?
This is just resume, no preseason, no history of the program, anything. I'll say this, three teams are three teams that we mentioned as being in that top tier earlier. And then two teams that are tougher to guess, I would say.
Well, if two are tough to pick, right, it's got to be an undefeated team.
Yeah.
Am I right in that estimation? Mm-hmm. Is it USC?
USC is not in there.
Okay.
I would start with the teams that are in the top tier, because it's going to be tough to pick these others.
Well, okay. So in no particular order here, Purdue's got to be up there.
Yep, Purdue
Gonzaga's got to be up there.
Yep, Purdue is, and Gonzaga.
Duke's got to be up there.
Duke is not. Duke is number 12 on the board. I guess because the Ohio State loss, I don't get
but,
it.
Like, but still, resume-wise, you beat one of the teams in the top five. Whatever. All right. UCLA, are they up there?
Nope. So you've got
Houston.
Houston is. Houston's number four. That's one of the surprising teams, I thought. Okay. Now, Houston's also number four in KenPom, but they have lost a game. They're 6-1.
And then Baylor's got to be in there.
Baylor's number five. So you're Baylor's missing the number five, one so team.
I'm missing the number one team.
It's a team I'm high on.
Team. Arizona.
Yep. Arizona is number one right now when you just look at resume off Bart Torvik. I thought that was interesting. Okay. They've basically just beaten up on a couple teams, and that helps. And then they played Michigan and beat up on them. Some other notables here when you go down the list, 47 Illinois, 50 Michigan. So those are two teams that the only reason they're up high in the rankings is mostly because of preseason stuff. 52 is Memphis, which... I'm done with Memphis. It's a joke. Every year they do this. Like, you lose to Georgia, that's unacceptable. Iowa State beat them. Now,
Iowa State's played really well.
They were picked to finish last in the Big 12. Like, the talent gap there. Memphis just has no offense. They have no point guard. Amani Bates and Jalen Duren are great in terms of long-term projects, and they have great rim protecting and great defense, but... if you don't have offense, like at some point, Penny Hardaway's got to instill some offense and some X's and O's into that team if they want to be anything.
Well, here's my worry if I'm a Memphis fan, okay?
Yeah.
Listen, Amani Bates, he doesn't have to do this, right? Like, he has to sit another year no matter what before he goes to the NBA. Like, at a certain point, if things are going south and they're not winning at Memphis, what's to say he's not going to say, all right, I'm done. Bye. Like, and do the James Wiseman and then go to the G League next year or something like that.
Right.
Like, it's on the table for sure.
It's just for them to be preseason top 10, I never got it. It was everyone was picking them.
No,
as,
I got it. I got that part.
The talent.
You infuse talent. But
you got
a
coach.
At the end of the day, yeah, you're right. You do need a coach. And everyone thought it was going to be a dream scenario given the coaching staff of Larry Brown and Sheed and Penny and all those guys. But it hasn't gone according to plan. That's for damn sure.
Right. And then real quick, three other notables on this Bart Torvik. Here's your resume. No preseason bias implicated on it. 85 is Syracuse. 88 is Oregon, who has really struggled and barely beat UC Riverside. I think they did win that game last night, last I looked. And then 98, St. Bonaventure. I thought that was surprising because everyone's been kind of on the Bonnies, and I don't know how Bart Torvik calculates some of this. Like, Duke being 12 doesn't make much sense to me, but it is just pure math, so it takes away any bias that we have on these teams. And I think that says a couple things. It says Arizona's really good, but then also you look at the rest of the Pac-12, and they all stink on this metric. Like, even Oregon down there, they were supposed to be one of the better teams, so... I don't know. I think Arizona, UCLA, they might just run that league this year based on the math of KenPom and all these sites.
Yeah, I do think Oregon will pick it up at a certain point, too.
Yeah,
I'm not overly worried. I think some of it's just meshing some of these new guys that they got in the transfer portal. But that's very interesting. I'm very, very intrigued by that list that you came up with there. I got a couple one-and-dones here that I want to get to. First of all, I don't know if you saw this. Chris Beard and Texas... putting
this
together
awesome.
A students-only home game. Awesome was this? They packed everyone into the volleyball gym. I can't remember who they played. It was some no-name opponent.
Right.
This is so cool. And they sold it out. There were like 3,000, 3,500 students packed into this little bandbox volleyball gym. That to me is awesome. That's what college basketball should be. I would love to see, because again, all these teams play these no-name schools or whatever. I would love to see every school, every power school, do something like this.
Yes. Well, Duke does it every game, right?
I was about to say, like, how could Duke do this? Oh, actually, right. Let more than like 1,000 students in.
Yeah. No, I think that was really cool and something that it goes back to. It's such an easy thing to argue for, but just get the students more involved, like play more true road games. Carolina does a good job of North Carolina going and playing at College of Charleston or at Wofford sometimes, stuff like that. It's gets criticized, and I saw even John Rothstein was talking about why is Cincinnati going on the road and playing, forget who it was now, it's like UMass Lowell or someone that just didn't really make sense for them to be playing on the road. And then our guy Rob Doster from the Field of 68 was arguing back at him a little bit, like not in a condescending way, but was just like, you know, why not do this? This is what college sports needs.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I think the little guy, like if you're a school like Elon or Wofford, when UNC comes to town, that's everything. Like that's really cool that they're doing that.
Like showcase your program, and you never know who's going to be in the stands, right? You never know if there's some future top recruit in the stands that saw Wes Miller come into UMass Lowell or wherever the hell it was and said, oh, I want to see Cincinnati. I wanted to see UMass Lowell or whatever. And they see Cincinnati come to town, put a whooping on them, and they forever in their mind now, it's like, oh, Cincinnati, Cincinnati, Cincinnati. Like, that stuff matters. It really does. And I think that's cool to see Wes Miller and some of these other – it's a lot of these younger coaches that are doing it, I feel like. And that's a good thing to see. One other one and done I've got – I wanted to give you this one last week because – but we didn't have a show last week. Holidays, schedules, all that stuff didn't work out. I saw the Sister Jean scouting report in person.
Wow.
And I got to say, like, there's God in this Chili's, man. Like, that was – unbelievable. Everything that it's pent up to be. I know some people hear about it and think, oh, it's just for show. Like, well, no. This thing's legit. She goes unscripted, just boom, gives you numbers of players on the opposing team. They were playing UIC, so it was a big, like, sort of rivalry game within the city of Chicago.
Wow.
But I saw it in person, and it is everything it's pent up to be. Loyola's a great little place to watch a basketball game, too.
Mm-hmm.
But to see that in person and hear her rally the troops, it's everything that it's made out to be. It's pretty awesome.
Man, what a great way to end the podcast. I got into
a Twitter war of words with a fake Sister Jean account, and I got to say, I've turned. All right, I found Jesus.
That is true, the Syracuse dynamic last year when Buddy was going on his run. Why don't you explain to the audience what happened in your Twitter war of words with Sister Jean?
So this is probably the highest my profile's ever gotten in life. I'm not going to lie. Like, this is like a
it won't top like this a, either. I think you're going to be great in your career, but I don't think you'll top this.
But it's like, it's not even a thing where it's like ego boosting because I effectively got shit on the entire time by a fake nun. But so here's what happened. After Buddy Boeheim's going on this run and like Loyola's getting all pent up and stuff like that because they're getting chesty because they just beat Illinois. And I just tweet out a gif of Buddy Boeheim doing like a little shrug and it was like, in all caps, Sister Jean don't want the smoke. And like, listen, Sister Jean didn't want that smoke from Buddy Boeheim. Like her scouting report on 35 in orange isn't going to be a very good one. And then this fake Sister Jean account quote tweets it and says, I want all the smoke. And I'm sitting there like, what the hell do I do with this? So I just kind of let it go by the wayside. It's like, all right, whatever. Like, this will blow over. Didn't blow over.
No,
Dwayne Wade started getting involved. Like, that's the magnitude here. Dwayne Wade started getting involved in this. He started, like, quote tweeting the fake Sister Jean and eye emojis and all that stuff. And I'm like, oh, shit. Like, yeah, I'm getting clapped by Dwayne Wade and fake Sister Jean here. Like, what am I going to do? And I will say, though, I can't remember what the account exactly is, but that tweet put that Sister Jean account on the map. I'm just going to say it, all right? So you're welcome for helping you out there, fake Sister Jean account, but that's like the highest it's going to get for me.
All right, well, that's going to wrap the podcast this week. What a way to close. We've got some good games coming up this weekend.
I don't know if I have to go to confession or what after this, but...
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's a tough one because you don't want to bite back at a nun, even though it's a fake nun.
I was praising it, though. Like, I love the Sister Jean scouting reports.
Right, you were.
We should do that. We should do that for every Loyola game. Every time we have a show before the Loyola game, I'll give the Sister Jean scouting report.
I love it. You've seen it firsthand now. You're one of the few that can tell that story, so I'm glad it lived up to the hype. But, all right, well, we will have a podcast for you guys next week, recapping another busy week of college basketball. It's been a great start to the season. Good time to subscribe if you're a College Hoops fan. We're here with you every single week, going over the biggest storylines, going over the best bets, everything like that. So subscribe if you haven't already. Follow the show on Twitter, @MadeTheNumber4March. And we'll talk to you guys next week.
The game was over.